Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Midwest Beat. 40 years ago on this day, the king of rock and roll left the building once and for all. Tonight, we're going to remember the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, on the 40th anniversary of his death at the age of 42. He died on August 16th, 1977, approximately 2 p.m. Central Time. I'll tell you where I was, I'll tell you some memories, and we'll play a lot of music. If you have any memories you'd like to share, give us a call. 219-769-9577 is the number you'll reach us at. We'll be back with a lot of Elvis after your headlines here. Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Midwest Beat. 40 years ago today, the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, shuffled off this mortal coil and left the building for the final time. Tonight we're going to remember Elvis by playing a lot of his music, sharing a few stories, and just maybe even taking some calls tonight, Dan.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Now, you were born well after Elvis's death.
I was, yes. I missed out on Elvis's life, but I've definitely am very familiar with his music and have enjoyed it for many years. So looking forward to tonight.
We're going to play a variety of songs, some hits, some not so famous songs. And let's start off the way Elvis did. Back in 1953, he walked into Sun Studios, recorded a handful of songs. This became his number one single. That's All Right, Mama.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do. That's all right. That's all right. That's all right, Mama. Any way you do. Well, Mama, she done told me. Papa done told me too. Son, that guy you fooling with, she ain't no good to you. But that's all right. That's all right. That's all right, Mama. Anyway, do.
That's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. An old old classic song from the Sun Record days. And I'll tell you, Elvis reinvented the wheel with that one. It was an old country song. And it got a lot of attention. He became known as the Hillbilly Cat. Sam Phillips, of course, discovered him. And that was an old Arthur Crudup song that he completely changed around. They supposedly invented it in the studio, if you believe the legend. And Bill Black and Scotty Moore were there. And they got it all together, and they were on a break and having some coffee. And Elvis decided to start scatting over this old bass line that Bill Black was doing. And the next thing you know, magic was made. Today is the day that Elvis Presley passed away at the age of 42. And we are remembering him, and I figured it'd be a great way to start off by doing that first song that brought him to national attention. That's All Right, Mama. And I had mentioned on the other side, I said it was number one. It wasn't a number one song. It was his first single. So I do want to correct that in case it was misconstrued as they say.
Very good.
Elvis Presley remains a remarkable performer 40 years after his death. There's still so many people that love him. So many generations not born at the time he died still attending shows in his honor. There's so many young Elvis impressionists, Elvis tribute artists out there. I've seen 15, 12-year-old Elvis kids out there wearing the wigs and the jumpsuits and the shades.
He's one of those artists that will never fade away. He's such a part of American culture. It's incredible.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of folks don't realize that Bruno Mars, one of today's top artists, started out as Little Elvis.
Oh, really?
He was an Elvis impersonator
at
5 or 6 years old.
Wow.
Had the jumpsuit, the whole bit. He was Little Elvis.
He still kind of has that Elvis vibe to him today with the hair and some of the outfits. So very cool.
That he does. And speaking of Elvis things, one of the annual events that we always talk about here on the show is the Elvis birthday spectacular celebration. And to join us real quick, because that show is officially on sale as of today, is Omar Farag. Hi, Omar.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Doing fine. We're remembering the King of Rock and Roll. And before we get into your show, on this day 40 years ago, he left the building a final time. And I was just wondering, what were you doing? What are your memories of that last day?
Wow, what was I doing? I had just gotten back from, I was a teacher in Egypt, and I just got back from Egypt, actually. That happened in August, yeah.
Right.
I got back in July from overseas. I was there for about a year, and that's right when I got back, and so it was a shock. The whole thing was a shock. I mean, I was a big fan of Elvis, and I loved his early stuff. But the movies sort of knocked me out of kilter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the movies sort of knocked me out. But that 68 comeback special and Hawaii, you know, you mentioned Hawaii. Elvis is huge in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did certain fundraising stuff in Hawaii that endeared him to that island.
Indeed.
And they love Elvis there, I'm telling you. And yet Bruno Mars, he was a Elvis impersonator when he was a kid. It's amazing watching some of the footage.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you're working with several of today's the NPR show prior to us, All Things Considered, had Sean Clush on, who's a good friend of yours, who you're bringing to the region in December. Now, you're moving the show that's usually in January to December. Is it going to be more of a Christmas show? Obviously, it's required because the Star Plaza where it is held is not going to be there, so...
Well, yeah, we're going to get the opportunity to add all of, you know, Elvis's holiday music.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, this show this year it's going to be longer than any other because it's the last one we're doing at Star Plaza, where we started doing these shows back in
27 years ago,
85.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time ago.
Blue Christmas is one of the true classic Christmas songs out there.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, well, you know, Elvis's Christmas music is legendary. I mean,
agreed.
Who doesn't at Christmas time put one of his LPs on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know, you know, it'll be a Blue Christmas without you. It's such a classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean...
Now, the show is officially on sale. You've got four shows. Two will be the birthday show still in January, which will be up in Chicago, up north.
Mm-hmm.
But the Star Plaza, and there's a second one that's going to be more of a Christmas show.
In Skokie.
Skokie, okay.
Skokie. Now, so we're going to do Skokie and Star Plaza, and then then a couple weeks later, I don't have the dates in front of me, but in January we're going to do the Paramount Arts Center,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do Rockford. Which is nice. And then we go from Rockford to Louisville, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Cleveland. So we've got quite a few dates to fill.
Now, the Star Plaza show is either December 2nd or 3rd. I'm trying to remember.
December
2nd. And those tickets are on sale. And, of course,
tickets are on sale as of today.
Sean Clush will be there. Ryan Pelton will be there. Sweet Inspirations will be there. Who else will be there?
Cody Ray Slaughter.
Oh, one of the great young talents we were just talking about.
Cody is really good. Fabulous Ambassadors are going to be there. And we're going to try and pull out some of the old guys that we used to have. I mean, I'm trying to get Rick and convince Rick to come back for one last time here. You know, we always love having Rick Cicito on the
show. Mm-hmm. He did a good job last year.
Oh, he did a great job. Rick is, you know, we love Rick. And he was on the first show we ever did. So I'm going to really try and apply the pressure here.
I saw Rick in September of 77. It was right after I had seen Elvis. I actually have my ticket stubs here in the studio. I brought my old scrapbook. I've got my Elvis ticket, and I've got my Rick Cicito tickets. And he was quite the fireball back then, and he still is. I was impressed when I saw him last year at your show.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in fact, I think I'm calling him later on tonight. We have a call set up to see what we can do to get him at least to do a comeback for a couple of songs.
There you go. Well, December 2nd is the show at the Star, and how do they get tickets? What's the website?
ETASpectacular.com.
All right, ETASpectacular.com. Thank you, Omar, for joining us, and good luck at the show, and you know I'll be there.
Yeah, all right, yeah, for sure.
Haven't missed one yet. All right, say hello to Rick Cicito for us.
I'll do that.
All right. Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Omar Farag, the Elvis Spectacular, this year, the Christmas show. Of course, as you said, Dan, I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of Blue Christmas, Christmas.
Oh, my favorite of the Elvis Christmas song. He's done great versions of some of the classics, too, but he does it well.
You know, you were talking about, in the beginning, when you were kind of promoing things, mm-hmm. that Elvis impacted my career very much. In fact, I wouldn't be here right now talking to you if it weren't for Elvis Presley.
That's actually one of my favorite stories that you've told me, because I never really knew how much Elvis, how much his career impacted the
different
start of
people.
Yours.
Yeah, and mine. People. And mine. I'm just one of many stories. And I'll tell you, when I was a little kid, my sister Sue, she's also, her real name is Marie, but we always called her Sue. Mm-hmm. Was always babysitting me. You know, I was the snot-nosed little brother that had to tag along. So she would take me to the Ridge Drive-In on the Highland-Griffith border there on Ridge Road, where the Jedi restaurant is now. It's a big outdoor drive-in. And we would go see all the old Elvis movies when they were fresh, you know, when they're brand new coming out, first-time run.
Sure.
And I can remember seeing Harum Scarum and Double Trouble and Trouble with Girls and all these great travelogue movies on that big screen. We'd play on the Rusty Swing set before the show, and then we'd all sit there, and her girlfriends from high school. I was always hanging out with all these, you know, high school girls. So it kind of rubbed off on me, the Elvis thing. They were all screaming young teenage girls loving, you know, the king of rock and roll on the screen.
Right.
So I became a big fan by default, by osmosis, really. And later on, as I started to get older, I really, you know, I saw the 68 special,
mm-hmm.
and that mesmerized me. To see him come out in that black leather outfit, after seeing him in the beach movies and stuff.
Sure.
And just controlling it, owning it. That guttural sound that he had so young was back. And, you know, and
he came back to show everybody that he's not done. He's not done. Beatles, Schmeedles,
yep.
I'm ready for.
He's back to take his throne back.
Right.
It's interesting because that TV show was never meant to be. And I did a couple of national articles on it with Al DeVorn, who was the guy that actually coined the phrase, Elvis has left the building. He was a good friend of mine. He was passed away coming back from an Elvis event, actually, just a few years back. But Al and I got to be very close friends, and he would tell me the stories of things. He's actually the guy that produced the Hawaiian concert, not the Aloha concert, mm-hmm. but the original Hawaiian concert in the early 60s that raised all the money for the USS Arizona.
Oh, okay.
In Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So just interesting stories. But getting back to the 68 special, it was originally supposed to be the Singer Christmas special. And it was Colonel Tom Parker wanted Elvis to wear, you know, a nice little sweater, a little mm-hmm. Santa Claus sweater, and sing Christmas carols. He wanted it to be like Perry Como. Mm-hmm. You know, he wanted Elvis to be that new adult crooner, take the place of Sinatra and Como and those guys. And it was one of the few times, if only time, that Elvis stood up to the Colonel and says, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, he had an ally in Steve Bender, who was a very young producer-director, and he kind of nudged Elvis a little bit and says, hey, you're the guy, you're the king, you're the rock star, do what you want to do. And they created all those little scenarios, those vignettes where he's the guitar man, and he, you know, and then he gathered his old friends, DJ Fontana, who's been on this show, a good friend of Omar that we just had here. Deej was playing the back of a guitar case, and Scotty Moore was there. Of course, Bill Black had already passed, but he gathered his old friends around him, and that was a magical moment. So it never should have happened, but it did, because Elvis decided to step up and speak up for himself.
And I might be wrong, but isn't that decision what kind of propelled him into like the new
next
Elvis
phase.
The next phase of his career?
He went to
probably kept him relevant in many ways.
He actually did this album from Memphis from Nashville to Memphis, the Memphis sessions, where he did Stax and everything. Mm-hmm. And created quite a new sound, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
And we're gonna play a cut from that comeback special, and I'm gonna tell you exactly how Elvis. So that was how I became an Elvis fan. We're gonna talk about how Elvis actually got me in the music business. So that'll all come up after this this next song here. This is a song that was from the 68 special, the AKA comeback special or singer Christmas special. Pick a title, it doesn't matter. Sure. It was called Everything. This is track number one. It's a great version of an old Elvis song. It's Trouble, Lieber and Stoller.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place. Looking for trouble? Just look right in my face. I was born standing up and talking back. My daddy was a green-eyed man, the jack because I'm evil. My middle name is misery. Around with me. Sundown, I left Kingston with my guitar up my coat. I hitchhiked all the way down to Memphis, got a room at the YMCA. And for the next 3 weeks, I went to hunting them nightclubs looking for a place to play. Well, I thought my picket would set them on fire, but nobody wanted to hire a guitar man. Well, I nearly bounced on the death down to Memphis. I run out of money and luck, so I bought me a ride down to Macon, Georgia on an overloaded boat. I bumped on down to Panama City, started picking out some of them all-night bars. I'm hoping I can make myself a dollar making music on my guitar. I got the same old story, them all-night beers. You know there ain't no room around here for a guitar man. So I slept in the hobo jungle. I roamed 1,000 miles of track till I found myself in Mobile, Alabama. Had a club they called Big Jack's. A little four-piece band was jamming, so I took my guitar and I set in. I showed them what a band would sound like with a swinging little guitar, man. Show 'em, son. Take a trip down to the ocean, find yourself down in Mobile. Made a night to a club called Jackson, you got a little time to kill. And in spite of that crowd of people, you'll wind up by the hill there floor. And thinking to find a little five-piece group up and down there from Mexico. Guess who leaving that five-piece down there? Well, wouldn't you know, is that swinging little guitar.
And and the crowd goes wild, the king of rock and roll. And that, of course, from the 68 comeback special. And I'll tell you, I was explaining how the Elvis world sucked me in, basically, and inspired me to get into the music business. And when Elvis first died in 1977, you know, a lot of people were, well, there was an outcry, a lot of people were going to Memphis, and there were vigils and all the stuff that often happened when celebrities die. And a couple of brothers, I won't mention their names, but a couple of brothers in Munster wrote this letter to the Times, this editorial letter to the editor, and it said, "Elvis, who cares? We agree with those who couldn't care less about why Elvis Presley's heart stopped. Personally, we have better things to worry about than a bloated ex-teen idol in his 40s acting out outdated mating rituals for hordes of squealing middle-aged matrons." I took such offense to that, being a young Elvis fan. Yeah, I thought, how dare you?
That is pretty harsh.
It's very harsh.
So this is just their letters to the editor that section to some
letter
guy
to the editor.
Ranting. Okay.
That was back in November of 77 when they were starting to do the autopsy and figure out what exactly made his heart stop.
So his death is fresh here.
Yeah, it was still fairly fresh. So I, you know, being this guy with attitude. Now, mind you, I'd never written a word ever. Now I'm, you know, I'm a national weekly columnist or a locally regional columnist. Mm-hmm. Have written for national magazines for 20, 30 years. Yeah. Lots and lots of stuff, appeared in books. But at this point, I was right out of high school, basically.
Sure.
I was 18 years old. And I was pissed.
Yeah.
You know, they're attacking my boy. So I wrote back, and this is what actually kickstarted my career. Yeah. And it's a little bit long, but I'm going to read it in its entirety because it hasn't been read since December 5th, 1977, when it was first published. The title is Elvis Defended. This is in response to the letter printed Sunday, November 27th, entitled Elvis, Who Cares? By the Brothers of Munster. I'll tell you who cares. The millions of people who bought his records and saw his movies. The millions who paid enormous sums of money, in some cases, to see him in concert. The millions who wept when he died and felt an emptiness deep inside. The thousands who waited in the sweltering heat for hours and hours just to view his body for a brief moment or two to say goodbye. The people who sent in thousands of dollars to the Heart Fund in his memory. They care. And finally, the thousands who just last month waited for hours in the freezing cold to view his grave for the first time. Elvis Presley was more than just an ex-teen idol acting outdated mating rituals to middle-aged matrons. His concerts were filled with fans of all ages. He has fans 10 and 11 years old, teenage fans, young adult fans, middle-aged fans, as well as the elderly fans who were there in the beginning. To most of these people, Elvis was more than just an entertainer. He was a friend, someone they could relate to and identify with. During his career, he showed young people that they could be their own people. But at the same time, he gave them that freedom. He taught them respect for their parents, country, and God. He always remembered his roots as quote-unquote white trash in Tupelo, Mississippi, and always tried to help others who were in need. Elvis raised thousands of dollars for the fight against cancer with his Hawaiian television special in 1973, which of course was the Aloha special. He often donated large sums of money to the Memphis Children's Hospital. In fact, in 1958, he launched the March of Dimes drive against polio, and he was one of the first, if not the first, public figures to publicize the importance of the Salk vaccine shots. Furthermore, he demonstrated his great generosity by giving away money and cars to strangers who were in need or who just weren't as fortunate as he. These people care, and always will, because to them, Elvis was more than an entertainer. He was a man who cared enough to help out and share what God had given him. And that was my response at 18 years old.
Yeah.
Never having written a word or been published in my life. That was my first byline.
Right. You can tell the passion. Yeah, the passion of that letter. My gosh, Tom. And that's kind of what sparked your career.
In fact, my dad called me in and he's like, "What did you do?" And I'm like, "Uh-oh, what did I do?" You know, I'm trying to think of every bad thing I possibly could have done.
Right.
He said the phone has been ringing, because back then, of course, everyone's in the phone book and everyone had landlines.
Right, right.
And these older ladies that were Elvis fans were calling and telling my dad how proud he should be of me for
sticking up for
Elvis
king.
And giving these facts, because so many people. Again, he was the first celebrity to stand up for Salk vaccine. Polio was a big deal in the 50s. A lot of people may not be walking today had he not helped raise funds and awareness.
And his support for the military throughout the years, serving as in the military and also just being a supporter always. So, yeah.
And if you ever go to Pearl Harbor and go to the USS Arizona Memorial, there's a plaque there because Elvis raised about 90% of the money. Wow. He did a concert there that my friend Al DeVorn, that I was talking about earlier, produced. He was the director and producer of it. He had a big band. Minnie Pearl was also on that show. And the money they raised wound up going to build the USS Arizona in the end.
Yeah, that kind of legacy really does hold true. So
It's an amazing legacy
and
that
you
he's
can
got.
really tell your passion in that letter.
And
I'm
still passionate about
it.
I really am.
I mean,
40 years after his death, and we have a guest we're going to bring on in just a second. But before we get to that, I do want to, you know, a lot of people compared when Elvis died to when John F. Kennedy died. They said, you know, where were you? You could remember all these things.
And he's one of those people, one of those prominent people in American culture that you remember. If you were alive at that time, you remember.
Yeah. You remember because it was a big impact. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 10 after, and my friend Butch and my friend Bob, co-workers of mine, we were out at a place called Tepe's on Broadway. Anyone that was around the 70s remembers Tepe's. It was a great place to get stereo stores and things. And right on the corner of Taft and 30, now the pool supply store is there. Right across from Broadway Music. Well, in that parking lot, there was a Vienna Red Hot guy. Mm-hmm. And we had just left Tepe's. My friend Bob bought a new stereo. And we were all excited. Of course, they were into Pink Floyd heavy and Led Zeppelin. They could not understand why a guy like me, one of them, would go out and buy King Creole as opposed to buying Dark Side of the Moon. You know, my friends thought I was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, we still got along. Music didn't matter so much at that point. It wasn't divisive. So we were all getting a hot dog at this Vienna place, and the news came on. And I remember I always had a good appetite. I had like two hot dogs and fries. And it came on just as I was getting ready to take that first bite, and I couldn't eat. I was so upset. Yeah. So my friend Bob and Butch each took a hot dog from me. Had no problem finishing my lunch.
Yeah.
And I was just devastated. So I remember that day, that time, that newscast, like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And here it is 40 years ago.
Wow.
So many young people, as I mentioned in the beginning, have been affected by Elvis over the years. Kids that weren't even born, generations that weren't even born at the time he lived or even when he died. Bruno Mars, as we mentioned, started out as an Elvis tribute artist. And we've got a friend of mine on the phone right now, Tim Dudley. And Tim is a professional Elvis performer. Tim, are you with us?
Yes. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tim. We are remembering the King of Rock and Roll on the show tonight. I'm sure, were not around when Elvis died. You're a young man, right?
Yes. I was born about 6.5 years after Elvis passed away in 1977.
Now, you are making a living and doing a very good job portraying him on stage and doing his music. You've got the jumpsuits down. You've got a lot of the moves down. You sound a lot like him. What got you into Elvis? What made you want to be an Elvis guy?
My grandparents and my mother were Elvis fans, so it's just natural they introduced me to the Elvis music. But, you know, like they tell me, they never thought I would take it this far, where I'm paying tribute to Elvis and everything. So, yeah.
Are you surprised that that 40 years after his death, this entertainer that nobody even saw in person, many of the people that are coming to see you, are so infatuated with Elvis? Why is he living? Why is his legacy living like it is?
I think because he cared about his fans, and it showed on stage. You know, he wasn't just about, you know, how many ticket sales he could get and stuff like that. He really, really cared about his fans, and he always, like my mother-in-law, who saw him live here in South Bend one time, said, you know, it seemed like he was singing to that one person all the time. And, you know, and he always gave God the glory, so, you know, he was going to get blessed no matter what. So
I think it's interesting that his only Grammy came for his gospel music, yet he's still the King of Rock and Roll. That is such a paradox, I think.
Yes, and I believe if he was still alive, I believe he would have gone into the gospel more than he would you know, the rock and roll side. Mm-hmm. I believe he was leaning towards that way, and it would have been interesting to see.
I agree, and I know a lot of the friends of Elvis that I've worked with over the years, many of them gone themselves now, said the same thing, that they felt that he would have gotten into perhaps even being a preacher and doing country and doing gospel. That's the direction he was headed in, because rock and roll held nothing for him anymore.
Yeah. And what's interesting is his stepbrother, Ricky, now is a preacher down south,
mm-hmm.
and everything. So he might have...
Now, are you have any shows coming up that you want to give a quick plug to?
I have one September 30th in Dansville, Illinois. It's all the information's on my website, timdudleyeta.com. Tickets go on sale September 1st. There's just a limited time to buying tickets, and all the information's on there.
timdudleyeta.com.
Yes.
All right,
and,
terrific.
And Dudley is D-U-D-L-E-Y.
D-U-D-L-E-Y. Very good. Tim, is there any other comments you can think of that you'd like to share with the Elvis world right now as we remember this great performer?
He just never forgot who he was. He was down to earth, very humble. And I call it, he had like the heart of Jesus. He always gave back to the people. He always gave back to the poor. He always gave back and never forgot where he came from. And mm-hmm. a lot of singers nowadays, I hate to say it, have forgotten that.
That's true. A lot don't give back.
Yep.
When you were on the phone, I don't know how long you were hanging with us. Did you hear what I was reading, my first editorial that I ever wrote when I was 18?
Yes, I think I heard about halfway through it.
About the fact, like I said, Elvis did so much. He helped launch the March of Dimes drive against
yes.
polio in 58. He raised the money for the USS Arizona. He provided milk for underprivileged kids in Memphis with the Milk Fund and actually helped do that. If he mm-hmm. if he saw a story, Jerry Schilling once told me, he goes, they'd be sitting there and Elvis would read a story wherever they were at, whatever city they were in. And something happened and there was a guy and he needed a wheelchair and he couldn't get a wheelchair. Elvis sent Jerry out, and I think it was Jerry, or maybe it was Joe Esposito. It was one of the two. And sent him out with a checkbook and says, buy him the best motorized wheelchair, whatever he mm-hmm. needs. And they just dropped it off at his house and left.
Yeah.
Doing random acts of kindness before that was even a catch term, a catchphrase.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your input.
Thank you, and it is such an honor. Thank you.
All right, TimDudleyETA.com, and that's D-U-D-L-E-Y. And you can catch him all over Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana, and Michigan doing a lot of shows. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we are going to play another song, and you know, since we got that 1968 TV special in our craw a little bit here, we were talking about DJ Fontana and Scotty Moore and everybody gathering around Elvis, and he sat down with that guitar on the chair and immediately stood up, put his foot on it, and says, "I ain't sitting down. It's time to rock and roll." Swiveled the hip, did the whole bit in the black leather, and this is the medley that he gave us on that 1968 special that back that year as a 10-year-old child, actually a 9-year-old child, impressed me so much with the whole black leather that I wound up buying black leather in my adulthood.
Oh, wow.
For many years when I was on stage, I would wear the black leather stuff when I was younger.
I've seen photos of you and your heyday with the black leather
times.
Good. Yeah. So it actually fit your style.
It did then. I'd look pretty funny in it now. But, you know, so the Elvis guys can get away with it. This is the medley that we heard of Elvis in the black leather and, again, taking you back to 68.
Well, Lordy, 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 Miss Cordy, gal, you sure look good to me. Well, please don't excite me, baby, I know it can't be me. All I give you all my money, gal, but you just won't treat me right. Come home till late at night. I know,
know. Now, wait a minute. There's something wrong with my lip. You remember that, don't you? Yeah. News for you, baby. I did 29 pictures like that.
Hey, Elvis, the finger was
there. The little finger. Yeah, that's all I can move in Florida. Yeah, the police filmed a show one time in Florida because the PTA, the YMCA, or somebody, they thought I was something. And they said, man, he's got to be crazy. So the police came out and they filmed the show. So I couldn't move. I had to stand still. The only thing I moved was my little finger like that. Give me another mother hand on the time. You know, for the whole show.
The King of Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley, from the 1968 comeback special, Going Up, Going Down. I love that song.
Yeah, that is such a cool
got
song.
Got me running, got me hiding. I mean, as I got older, I started getting up with bands and singing, I mean, that was a song that I used to do, that one. His version of Johnny B. Goode, things like that.
The energy in that performance, too, you could tell he's just having a blast.
Yeah. And he was so nervous. I remember DJ Fontana telling me that Elvis was like a cat backstage. He was pacing back and forth. He was so nervous. Didn't think he was going to make it. Said, what if people don't come? What if they don't like me anymore? He had never performed live since, you know, 10 years earlier.
Right.
And he'd been doing movies.
You wouldn't think he was that nervous going. When he's on stage, the energy just...
Oh, it just took over. The adrenaline took over. But think about it. I mean, when he left, it was the early 60s.
Right.
Then all the drugs and the war and the Beatles and the long hair and the psychedelic, everything changed.
He left right around the time the Beatles started making it big.
Exactly.
Right?
He left around 63. They came in 64 and took over. And
honestly, I think it's safe to say that the Beatles were heavily influenced by
John Lennon said before Elvis there was nothing. I mean, he's famously quoted for that. But you think about it. I mean, if you were doing what you were doing and suddenly everything changed and you were like obsolete, mm-hmm. which basically his sound was obsolete, and he hadn't performed live, he didn't even know if he could do it anymore. So many years had gone past. So his friends would tell me that they were backstage with him and he was like, I don't know. He was freaking out.
Panic attack.
And he went out there and the adrenaline took over. And the second he went on stage and the crowd cheered, he was back.
He was back. And he's the kind of guy that, I mean, the kind of performer where that's the doubt and stuff might be there, but mm-hmm. I don't think he could have. You can't lose something like that if you're that caliber.
You got it or you don't.
Right. He's that caliber where that kind of ability is not just going away, even in 10 years.
Right. I went to Memphis the year after he died and was covering it down there and interviewing folks for the first anniversary of his death. And I remember so many people coming out and just telling me and sharing stories with me about how being a fan had impacted their life. And I got some famous quotes here. Now, over the years, I've gotten to know pretty much everybody that worked with Elvis at one time or another. When I went down there, I met his uncle Vernon, I can't think of his name. Vester, Uncle Vester, who is the gatekeeper, Vester Presley. And over the years, I've had a chance with different Elvis events to meet and talk and interview and work with some of the sidemen and friends of his. And I've got a couple of different quotes I pulled from my various interviews over the years. In 1988, I worked with the Jordanaires, who were the vocal group behind all of Elvis's RCA records. And Gordon Stoker, who's now long gone, passed away, told me this quote. It was, Elvis was genuine. He was a good soul who truly loved his fans and always respected the people who worked with him. He never took anyone or anything for granted. It's important to keep his music alive and let people know the man that I knew, not only a wonderful entertainer, but a kind man, and a good human being. And that was Gordon Stoker of the Jordanaires back in 1988. He shared that with me. Ray Walker, another member of the Jordanaires, told me this just a few years ago when I interviewed him. Ray said, I remember one day my little granddaughter Samantha was here playing in my office when an Elvis song came on the radio. I think it was Jailhouse Rock, and she heard the music. She pulled herself up from her toys, stood in front of the radio, listening. When the Elvis song was done and something else came on, she crawled back over to her toys and began to play. Here she was 6 months old, and Elvis's voice connected with her in some special way. He was able to connect with all kinds of people of all ages and all backgrounds. That is why he still connects with so many people today. And again, Ray Walker, a member of the Jordanaires, who sang backup on all the RCA hits. And I'll read one more, and then we'll get to a couple. We'll get to a song and maybe another guest. Joe Esposito, who was Elvis's best man, his road manager for many years, and who had served in the Army with him. Joe and I got to be very, very close. We did several events together over the years and connected. And he recently passed away, but this was one of my favorite quotes from him when I asked him about why Elvis mattered and why he was such a big part of Joe's life. Joe said, "Elvis just cared about people and loved helping people. Elvis never had a specific cause. He would help wherever and whenever he saw a need. He'd hand out checks to money to people in need. If he saw something in the newspaper about a family or a person in need, he would send a check or he would send us to help them. He had a big heart and was the most generous person I've ever known. His fans have been inspired by that part of Elvis to continue helping people in his name. I think about him, I thank him, and I miss him every single day of my life." Now, Joe recently left us, passed away, but that was the kind of guy Elvis was.
Yeah, and you could tell by the friends and the people that he's met along the way that he's made those impressions that last for their entire lives.
Everyone I've met that knows him or knew him just has these wonderful stories to share. I've heard nothing negative. And at this point, 40 years later, I mean, the tell-alls can come out.
Did you ever try to meet him personally? Because I feel
I wasn't in the business yet, but I did see him.
I still feel like you're the kind of guy that would go to his concert and run up on stage and try to,
if I had been close enough, I probably would have, but, you know, I was lucky to get the nosebleed seats.
Sure.
I saw him May 2nd, 1977, and I guess we have someone on the phone that is connected to that?
Someone close to you, Tom.
All right. Hello?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Sister.
Oh, this is Charlotte, my sister. And you were a big Beatle fan. You were in the British Invasion stuff, I think, more than Elvis. I think our other sister, Marie, was the Elvis nut.
Yeah, yes, I was. But I did like Elvis. And I remember show that you were talking about his last one that you attended in Chicago in May of 77.
Mm-hmm.
You had invited me to attend with you, but unfortunately, the job that I had to go away that week for a business trip, and I was unable to go with you. And I still think of it this day about the opportunity that I had that passed me by.
Yeah, the last time he ever performed in Chicago, and just 4 or 5 months later, he'd be gone. I'll tell you, we wound up with nosebleed seats. I do have a picture with me and my concert ticket from there with me here in the studio to show Dan, who wasn't even born yet. The picture's like he's like Adam Ant. I mean, he's like an eighth of an inch tall in this little disposable camera we had back in the day. But the memory was incredible, and I wish you would have been able to come with me.
Yeah, that was a show that was not to be missed. Opportunity of a lifetime, but unfortunately, it didn't work out for me.
Now, is there a favorite Elvis song that you had?
Yes, I've always liked "I Want You," "I Need You," "I Love You."
Okay, we'll try to get to that before we sign off tonight.
He definitely was a talented person, and I remember when I heard the news too. I was at work, sitting in my office, when I heard it come over the radio, and it was really, really sad.
Yeah, that was, I think everybody remembers where they were. Again, a lot of people compare it to the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, I actually remember the Kennedy assassination, even though I was only four. But I remember, the only thing I remember is probably my earliest memory is I remember this old square brown TV in our basement and that like Dalmatian tile floor. And I was sitting on the floor and it was cold. My mom and dad were sitting there with us. I think we were all in the room and we were watching the funeral procession. And that was like my earliest memory that I can recall.
Yeah.
So I was about 4 years old on that. And Elvis, of course, impacted the same way with many people, probably many youngsters that were three or four at the time.
Sure. Yeah.
So, well, Charlotte, it's wonderful talking with you.
Well, I enjoy your show. I'm calling in from Maryland, and I know your fans appreciate all the background that you do on your guests and your topics.
I want to say there's nobody that researches a show, or this is just for me, like Tom Lounges does, or knows local music better.
That certainly is true. I tell him that all the time.
Well, I'm glad you listen via the stream.
It's good to talk to you, Tom, and I send you my love from Maryland.
All right. Say hello to everybody, and we'll see you when you get back to the region.
All right. Love you.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So many different celebrities, as I mentioned, some of these guys that we were quoting here. I'll do one more, and then we're going to play a song. And let's pick somebody good here. I have so many quotes over the years. Jerry Schilling. Jerry Schilling was one of Elvis's best friends. He used to play football together at Humes High School. And, Jerry's a lifelong friend.
He'll keep a friendship for that long.
Too. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Even though it's high school and he's some big-time guy now. This is a high school friend from football.
And he became one of the Memphis Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
And Jerry was really is still really a good guy. He's still with us. He wrote a book a few years ago called Me and a Guy Named Elvis. And Jerry told me, he says, Elvis was a very giving person who treated everyone like family. He was a generous and compassionate person who cared about people and never took what he had for granted. He would be very proud to know that so many people all these years later still love him and love his music. And it was Jerry, actually, because I had interviewed Lisa Marie Presley twice and had gone to see her and got an autographed album from her and things. And Jerry called me and said, by the way, Tom, I just want to let you know that you're on Lisa's A-list, I guess, or top list. Because I don't want to talk to her about Michael Jackson or Nick Cage or any of the
right.
I want to talk to her about her music, you know, when I talk to her. So we really didn't talk much about her dad, and I think she respected that. But Jerry said I was on her A-list, so I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, you should try to get her back on the horn.
I would like to. I would like to. And, of course, her daughter, Riley Keough, is in that new movie coming out, that new action film. She was just on James Corden.
The James Corden show?
Yeah, she was on really? Last night or the night before.
I wasn't aware of that. I'll look that up because that's interesting.
Riley Keough.
Riley Keough. All right.
K-E-O-G-H, I believe it is. And so anyway, one other, we're going to get a song here. The last celebrity story is I interviewed Jerry Butler of the Impressions many times over the years, a famous Chicagoan. And one of the songs that Elvis covered during the Memphis period, right after the comeback special, when he was really getting back into serious songs, was Only the Strong Survive. It's a song that Jerry Butler co-wrote with Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff, the great R&B stars, they were songwriters. And I remember Jerry telling me, he goes, you know, R&B, Elvis, they were all kind of intertwined. Elvis embraced all the races. Mm-hmm. And Jerry said, you know, having Elvis Presley cut one of your records certainly doesn't hurt.
No.
You know, your reputation sure or your wallet. So we're going to play this one and send it out to one of the great R&B singers of our time, certainly one in Chicago, Mr. Jerry Butler. This is Elvis doing his song, Only the Strong Survive.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. And my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her say, Boy, oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Listen to me, get up off of your knees, 'cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Oh, you gotta be strong, you better hold on, don't go. All around with your head hung down. Well, I wouldn't let that little girl know, I wouldn't let her know. Made me feel like a clown. There's a whole lot of girls looking for a good man like you. Oh, but you'll never meet him if you give up now and say your life is through. And she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Oh,
The Strong Survive, a song written by Chicagoan Jerry Butler, former member of The Impressions, a great R&B singer in his own right, and also written with Gamble and Huff, a great R&B songwriting team. Jerry telling me that having Elvis Presley cut that song was certainly a feather in his cap, very proud of that because of Elvis being who he was.
Right.
And obviously I'm sure it didn't hurt the checkbook too much because
Elvis
was on the comeback at that time. It was after the 68 special. And I had a chance to work with several of Elvis's co-stars. Again, going back to the Ridge Drive-In with my sister Sue, we would watch all these movies, and I got a chance to actually meet some of the girls that were in these movies. Got to meet Julie Parrish, who was in the Paradise Hawaiian style movie, and what was her name? Deborah Wally, who starred in the spin-out movie. In fact, I have a picture of me. I'll have to show you sometime, Dan.
Yeah.
Sitting, actually not sitting, but standing next to the actual spin-out car from the movie.
Oh, sweet.
I had a chance to be part of the artifacts when I hired the Jimmy Velvet Traveling Elvis Museum back in the 80s. I hired him to bring out the diamond rings, the jumpsuits, the cars, things like that at an event I was doing.
That's very cool.
And of course, Arlene Charles, Charlie Smith, our good friend that's been here in the studio many times, one of my clients.
Yeah.
She was in four of Elvis's movies and has told us some wonderful stories. Julie, for instance, Julie Parrish from Paradise Hawaiian Style, said, Elvis was a total gentleman. One day in particular, I'd gotten sick on the set. Elvis picked me up and carried me into his dressing room and was genuinely concerned about me. He was like that with everyone. He was very compassionate. And you'll remember Charlie Smith telling us how she was so nervous on the set that he could tell she was nervous. So he would joke around and he tripped and fell on her. Says, now I've fallen for you. You can't be nervous anymore. So I guess he was always a clown and was always making his co-stars feel well and feel comfortable. And just a great guy. And it's a shame he died so young at the age of 40 years ago.
It is.
I was happy to hear my sister Charlotte call in. And thank you for patching her through. Let's play a song that she wanted to hear going back to the 60s. This is I Want You, I Need You, I Love You. This is for my sister Charlotte.
Hold me close, hold me tight, make me thrill with delight. Let me know where I stand from the start. I want you, I need you, I love you with all my heart. Every time that you're near, all my cares disappear.
Thank you for listening to Midwest Beat with me, Tom Lounges, remembering the late, great Elvis Presley 40 years after he passed. Why is Elvis still popular? Why does every village, town, and city still have their own Elvis impersonators, tribute artists? And, well, it's because he touched souls. He touched things. He was more than an entertainer, as we've heard from these different quotes over the years. Elvis has truly withstood the passing of time and trends. He continues to generate millions of dollars a year in revenue, more in death than he ever did in life, and he will forever be the king of rock and roll to me and so many others. Thank you for listening, and God bless Elvis Presley.